This year is dedicated Le'ilui Nishmas Rachel Leah Bas Rav Chaim Tzvi. Last week, we tried to understand the words of the Gaon at the end of Klal Beis from lines 53 until the end, which is line 62. Let us review them and with the Peirush, with the commentary which I gave, and then today in Mitzvah Hashem, we're going to discuss the implications, the very profound philosophical and legal and eschatological implications of the words of the Gaon. Once again, Abandav Kuf Chav Ches, line 53. V'atik Yoimin, Nikru Sheshish Mei Breishis. Atik Yoimin refers to the 6 days of creation. Sheheina Yomim HaKoidim Lakoil. These are the first 6 days. V'hein Nelom Gamkin. These days are also hidden. We'll see in a little while what hiddenness means. L'chein ha'ashkocha, asher hayu ba'itzel ha'shesh yomamim, nikru yatik yomim. The hashkocha, God's providence that existed during the 6 days, is also called atik yomim. And we understood that to mean that the worlds all rose to what's called atzilus, that's what we explained last time. And in atzilus we say, iyu v'gamel chad b'hoin, that the Kadosh Baruch Hu is at one with his creation. And even the most physical world, that the world of Asiya, rose to an area before Atzilus, that's Olam HaBriah, and because of this, since God is almost at one with his creation, this is what the Gaon, that's what the Gaon refers to the special Hashkacha that existed during the 6 days of creation. Now, the Gaon makes a very, very important statement here. What the Gaon is that he notes that in the Chumash we see that the Beriya, the creation, is called Toiv. Kadosh Baruch Hu calls the creation Toiv. What this means is that in fact the physical creation contained what's called an ethical content, and therefore what we have is a combining or an identity of ethics and ontology, and this is called Tamei HaMitzvos. Right? Tamei HaMitzvos meaning that each mitzvah is an expression of the metaphysical worlds. Shehein tachlis kavodasis baruch asher gonos bahem. Of course, the Tamei HaMitzvos, this ethical content, is in fact actually the purpose of the mitzvahs, and because Baruch Hu has embedded the mitzvah, the creation, with what's called Tamei HaMitzvos. But of course, when will man be privy to these Tamei HaMitzvos? When will man be privy to the unity of ontology and ethics? Says the Gaon, only when the Beruim are b'tachlis kavanas habriya. Now, when will that be? That will not be, probably not within the next 15 minutes, or not within the time of this Shia. But says the Gaon, Haina la'asid lavoi. That will be in the future. When will that happen? What will be the state of the world at the time? Then people will be privy to the Tamei HaMitzvos, when people can actually see the ethical content of the creation. That's when Atik Yoimin sits on the chair. Now we explained that in accordance with the Lashem and the Perush HaGaon and the Sefer Yetzirah. This will take place when, in fact, all the worlds are in Atzilus, and that our physical world corresponds to the upper part of the Olam HaBriah, where God is almost at one with his creations. And that's what it means to say, Atik Yomim Yosef Ekursin Ramiyai. The Kursin is called the Olam HaKisei, the world of the chair, of the throne, and that refers to Olam HaBriah. That means that from Olam HaBriah, there will be a glimpse into the state of Atzilus, where of course, Iyu v'gamel chad b'hoin, like the Zohar says, God is at once with his creation, and therefore, what the Gaon, the special concept the Gaon is telling us, is that the unity of the physical and the spiritual, which takes place in Atzilus, and which is the vision of Olam HaBriah, is the same thing as the unity of ontology and ethics. V'yu shamayim achadoshim v'oretz achadosha, and when this happens in the future, this is what Yeshayahu refers to when he speaks about Hashamayim, Hachadoshim, Ve'oretz Hachadosha, V'yismach Hashem B'maisa. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu will rejoice with his creation. Kamo be'eis abriyah, we're going to go back to the 6 days of creation. Vizgala az tamei ha-mitzvahs shekisa atik yoimin, and then will be revealed the tamei ha-mitzvahs and HaKadosh Baruch Hu during the period of world history, post Chet Adam HaRishon, pre-messianic era, hides. And that is the meaning of the pasuk, l'michsa atik. Now, we have here a very important concept in the Gaon. What the Gaon is saying is that the unity of the physical and the spiritual immanence, which the Gaon has, of course, tried his best to stay away from, this will take place in the future, li'asid lafay. And at the same time, what we're going to have is a unity of ontology and ethics, namely that man will be able to perceive the creation as part of the ethical content of the creation, perceive the mitzvahs as part of the ethical content of the creation. That is here the specific idea that the Gaon is bringing to us. Now, we have to raise the following question. What is the significance of the fact that the Gaon says that this unity of physical and spiritual, or namely this unity of ontology ethics, will be li'asid laboy, will be in the future? And the Gaon says it will be in the future when we see that in fact nature has changed its substance, has become more spiritual. Now, the fact is that what the Gaon has come to tell us is that the Messianic age will only come when there are notable changes in the physical reality of the world. Before, as so long as the entirety of the world remains the way it is, then for sure one has to look at an absolute antinomy between ontology and ethics. Now, the fact is that this concept of the Messianic age as ushering in some way, a change in the mitzvahs, or let's put it this way, a combination of ethics and ontology, is really what's behind, in fact, the movement of Christianity, as it in fact actually began in the Common Era, and found expression very much in the debate which we see that the Rishonim had with the Christians. Now, before we in fact actually go to the Rishonim, let's just make sure that we are, in fact, we're casting Christian ethics in the proper light. So, if I may read, and this is a Maramokim which I gave out on the Companion to Ethics, edited by Peter Singer, on page 100. There he brings a work from Joseph Klausner, who wrote a book called Jesus of Nazareth in 1925. Right? There he says that the Christian ethic is an ethic for the days of the Messiah and impossible short of them. It breaks up the family, ignores justice, and would disrupt social stability. More than that, has been ignored by all except priests and recluses. And it's very shallow, and it's shallow, every kind of wickedness and vice has flourished. How much better the practical corporate ethic of Judaism? For instance, the rabbis would have been likely to agree with Jesus that the Sabbath was made for man and not man for the Sabbath. But they wanted a rule for breaking the normal Sabbath rules, and this he did not give. This is not because life can be lived without rules or calls, like an extemporary speaker, but because Jesus' ethics is a different dimension. Now, the fact is this this analysis of Christianity is actually shared by a very famous expert writer on moral philosophy. His name is Alastair MacIntyre. I'm sure some of you might have read his book, After Virtue, which is a classic. I'm reading now from his famous book, A Short History of Ethics, on page 115, on Christianity. Says MacIntyre the following thing. The paradox of Christian ethics is precisely that it has always tried to devise a code for society as a whole from pronouncements which were addressed to individuals or small communities to separate themselves off from the rest of society. This is true both of the ethics of Jesus and of the ethics of St. Paul. Both Jesus and St. Paul preached an ethics devised for a short interim period before God finally inaugurated the Messianic kingdom and history was brought to a conclusion. We cannot therefore expect to find in what they say a basis for life in continuing society. Now, McIntyre goes on, but I think that the message is very, very clear. Namely, that Christianity, Christian ethics, as espoused by Jesus and St. Paul, is an ethics for Yemais Bashiach, for Messianic time. It's not an ethics that could be sustained over a period of history where people are not living under Messianic conditions. Now, the fact is that the Christians debated this in the Middle Ages with the Jews. This is actually, in fact, a tshuva that the Rashba wrote. I think he wrote this. He wrote this tshuva to a certain Dominican priest who was called Raymond Martin, who lived in Barcelona. Now, all of you have this. This is the Chiddush HaRashba on the Agadais, on Brachos Yedbeis Amidbeis. I Xerox did and sent it out. And there, the priest wants to bring a raya, a proof from the Mishnah, right? Or from a brisa that appears in the Gemara and Shabbos of Yedbeis Amidbeis, that indicates that, in fact, actually, that Ben Zayma argued Chachamim and held that we're not going to be Maskiyat Yis Mitzrayim Limayis HaMashiach. As a consequence of this, argues the Kommer, argues the priest, all those mitzvahs, which in fact are expressed in the Torah with the Adam, that they are Zecha, Laman Tizka, Shem Tzachami Alt Mitzrayim, all these mitzvahs will be nullified in the future. Therefore, the priest wanted to argue that we see even in Judaism, the mitzvahs are only transient. In the future, the mitzvahs will be nullified. And what this means is that, in fact, actually, the essence of Judaism is really what's called the spirit of the law in the letter of the law. Now, the Rashba has a tshuva. I won't go through the entire tshuva. You can look at it in the Xeroxes, the photocopies that you received on the internet. But, for example, if you go to Daf Lamed, the Rashba, when he brings the pasuk, that it says, Loi soichal, alof chomet, shiva shom teuchel ab matzis lechem oini. Says the Rashba, what that means is not that the reason you will eat matzahs, and the reason is because that you should remember that you left Egypt, which implies, according to Ben Zayma, in the future there won't be matzahs. But says the Rashba, what the pasuk means to say, in order that these mitzvahs, like matzah, right, and not eating chametz, you should not forget about them, because of this tisko bepeh b'chol yom tisko miyans mitzrayim. You should remember every single day the going mitzrayim. Meaning that Rashba understood that laman tisko is not a reason for a mitzvah, but actually is a type of a mitzvah in itself. It's almost like a hechsher mitzvah. Now, what about the pronouncement of the Gemara in Nida that mitzvahs betaylessly also love, or mitzvahs a bottle in the future? So says the Rashba, that's not referring to a period of time in history, but that's referring to, and I'm quoting from the Rashba and Daf Lamed Beis, at the end of the second line, La'achar hamavis mamish, speaking about after death. And the Rashba elaborates upon this. In other words, it was clear to the Rashba that Judaism does not countenance any type of nullification of the mitzvahs. Now, the fact is that the Ritvor in Samach Aleph Amud Beis brings two different shitas on this. The Ritvor, and we also sent out this photocopy on the internet. So, in the Rav Kook edition, on column, I guess I can call it column Shin Tzadik, the Ritvor does understand literally that when the Gemara says mitzvahs betelesli also lavoi, it means at one point in the future, in the future. So says the Ritvor, what about the Christians? Says the Ritvor, and I'm reading for the Rishpa, the second paragraph on Kalim's Shin Tzadik. Vim lashecha min, if one of the minim should whisper to you, mitamide Yeshu, for the Talmidim of Yeshu, that's Jesus, loimar, saying, kevin sha mitzvahs betelesli also lavoi, since the mitzvahs are bottled in the future, therefore the Torah was only given for an interim historical period. And therefore, as a consequence of this, That Yeshua had permission to actually tamper with the mitzvahs, and there's a bracket there, chas v'shalom. So what would be our response? Afata emaloi, misha liba noikfi oi mekein, sheha teira lo nit lizman, ela kol zaman sheha oilem hazeh kayem, sheesh bois chus oi choyva. Aval le oilem haba sheein lo chus v'lo choyva, nimsa patel be'aleh. In other words, the world, it is true in the future, that in fact, the Mitzvah Batel. But it's not during the historical period of this physical world. But it rather speaking about Olam Haba. Now, his Lashon, Lo Yizkus V'Lo Yechayv, is not clear how to understand this. But the fact is, what the Ritva is saying, is that even though Mitzvahs might be Batel, that's in the far future. So long as the world still operates within the norms of the physical world, the physical nature as we know it, therefore, we have no right to change the mitzvahs. So, we see clearly, in fact, that the Goyim gives us a terutz ke'en de ritfo. However, he delineates things much more sharply. What does la'asid lovi mean in the Goyim? When we see a palpable change in the physical nature, the ontology of the world, and that where we will see palpably that, in fact, the world becomes infused with spirituality, the Shemayim HaChadoshim, the Eretz HaChadoshah, then we can speak about what's called the Tamei HaMitzvah. Of course, the Goyim is not saying that Mitzvah is going to change. But at least, the Goyim is saying that we will see, in a certain sense, a certain ethical content in the physical world. And in fact, this ethical content in the physical world is actually a hallmark of Christian thought. I am now going back to my companion to ethics, from which I have Baruch Hashem learned a little bit of philosophy of ethics. And I want to quote one of the most famous of Christian thinkers who lived during the Middle Ages. That is Thomas Aquinas. Now, Thomas Aquinas wrote a very large work called the Summa Theologia. I'm probably mispronouncing this Latin word. Baruch Hashem Jasper is not here to correct me. So let me quote from Thomas Aquinas' Summa Theologia. It's actually in the Companion to Ethics on page 165, says Thomas Aquinas, "Whatever is contrary to the order of reason is contrary to the order of human beings as such, and what is reasonable is in accordance with human nature as such. The good of a human being is being in accord with reason, and human evil is being outside the order of reasonableness. So human virtue, which makes good both the human person and his works, is in accordance with human nature, just insofar as in accordance with reason. And vice is contrary to human nature, just insofar as it is contrary to the order of reasonableness." What Aquinas is establishing here is what's called natural law. Says Aquinas, if we look, in fact, to the world, to what nature, what is most natural, and therefore most reasonable, that's what dictates our ethics. So clearly, without a Torah, the fact is that we can actually look to nature for ethics. This is, in fact, its very statement of a Gemara in Erevin, Kufa and Beis. The Gemara says there clearly, had the Torah not been given, would actually learn different ethics from the animals, from an ant, from a cat, etc., etc. Look at the Gemara there. That's if the Torah had not been given. In other words, if the Torah had not been given, we could actually follow, you know, St. Thomas Aquinas. Given the fact, though, that the Torah was given, so therefore, in fact is, looking for an ethics in nature, according to the Goyim, would be equivalent to looking for a spiritual content in the physical world. The Goyim is, in fact, actually making those things analogous. As a result of that, that's a very dangerous thing. Now, the fact is that the danger of this we see actually to have been expressed by Reb Chaim Volozhin and Reb Shechayim in the Shaul Gimel, Perak Gimel and Perak Dalet, Chaim Volozhin's attack on Hasidim, which we learned about a week or two ago, was precisely that since Hasidim saw spiritual content in the physical world imminent, so Chaim Volozhin saw that as an undermining of the foundations of Halacha. Said Chaim Volozhin, if in fact we believe that the world is basically composed of the Ein Sof, or filled with the Ein Sof of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, why would a person decide that he should make, is more fitting to make brachas in a Beis HaMedrash more than in a lavatory? Therefore, Reb Chaim Volosher understood that in fact, imminence, not only, I mean, the Goyim understood imminence to be explicit paganism. Reb Chaim Volosher, on the other hand, understood imminence, as we explained, to be a danger for the halachic system. The Goyim understands the same thing too. The Goyim will say that for sure, imminence could possibly be where the ethical content of nature is revealed, the time of it is revealed, would be a dangerous thing if one, in fact, could know it in this physical world. Because the time of it could only be known in the future, when all of the physical worlds rise to the spiritual world, what the Goyim is saying is chas v'shalom, the tamei mitzvahs, which means the ethical content of the physical world, is something that man is not privy to while he lives in a state of physicality in nature as we know it today. So in other words, what the Goyim really is doing, in a certain sense, is that the Goyim is rejecting for our physical world as we know it, the possibility that this physical is filled with the spiritual, and that nature is filled with an ethical content, and therefore one must regard the mitzvahs as being entirely separate from the physical creation. And that goes back to what the Goyim has been discussing in Klal Beis, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu reveals himself with two separate Sfarim. There's a Sefer of Maisa, Sefer Sapa Sipa, which is Maisa, and there's a Sefer of Dibor. However, the Goyim maintains an absolute dichotomy between the Sefer of Dibor and the Sefer of Maisa. The union of these two things will only be Li'asid Lavoi when nature takes upon entirely different spiritual content. That is clearly the Shita of the Goyim. Now, the fact is that this concept, the relationship between ontology and ethics, is something which has actually been a subject in philosophy throughout entire history. In fact, to convince you that this is true, I will give edus from someone who is Neman B'Yisurin, that's Rabbi Yosef Ben Soloveitchik, in his very famous essay, which has only been published in Hebrew, of Ubikashta Misham, on page 225, and I think I actually sent out the Xeroxes of this too. This is Ubikashta Misham, at the end of Beis, page 225. Let me read from Rabban Shel Kol Yisrael, what he has to say about the distinction, or between the dichotomy between ontology and ethics. Says Rabbi Yosef Ben, I'm now on page 225 on the first line, the first paragraph. He says, Hamusa philosophy, the philosophy of ethics, we must kedem at Kant, from time immemorial until Kant, and from Kant until our time. It's interesting how Kant represents a watershed. I want to remind everybody that Kant believed in the total dichotomy between ontology and ethics. Toya Alakesher has always questioned the connection ben hatzava musari, between ethics, v'choika reali, which is ontology, natural law. B'milim acherot, in other words, in using other languages, language, mevakeshu derech min hametzias teva, lemetzias ruach musari. Philosophy has always looked for the way from the natural order to the ethical spirit, which says Kant said there's actually no way. One cannot derive an ought from an is. Harbe kulmusin nishtabu v'habe dio nishpacha. Much ink has been spilled. L'shem piskoin bayas achdois chukas amusav chokateva. This issue of ontology and ethics, in fact, much has been written about this. There's a very, very good by Hilary Putnam, which speaks about ontology, is called Ontology Without Ethics. Hagisha philosophia niflaga. He says philosophers disagreed on that. Yesha oksu b'mida ha-noshes ha-etika v'chibura l'shtalshalus anthropologiut sociologiut ha-metzamtzemes ha-sachuka ha-mustoros p'rushus fizitivizit to alanatit, right? V'yesh yuchiku leches l'mareches chukas arochim Sofki Hachleti, I can't read the Hebrew here, Hatluya Ablima. Okay? Basically, the Machlaikis dispute is whether ethics can be derived from ontology or not. So he says like this, Hayados Echriza. Judaism has declared. This is, once again, this is Rabban Shalkal Yisrael, Rabbi Yosha Ben Soloveitchik, saying that Judaism has declared, Ein ben chuka giluyas v'choik antologit ela shinoi tefisa belvad. Basically, the ethical revelation and ontological law, there's no difference between them, except from a point of view. Hachoik ha-antologi, ontological law, ha-mufkan ha-yedei mitzias bereishis, which is expressed to ma'aseh bereishis, mitgale la-adam b'demus tzav musar giloye, reveals to man an ethical demand. So, Rabbi Yosha ben Soloveitchik has basically lost his credentials as a Litvish Yid, I'm sorry to say. But Rabbi Yosha ben Soloveitchik understands that in fact the physical world reveals a certain type of moral law. The fact is, we see very clearly in the Goyin that this is not true, right? The Goyin says clearly that at Har Sinai, HaKadosh Baruch Hu revealed through nature. And what did the Klal Yisrael get through nature? I'm going back to Daf Kuf Chav Zayin. All he got was two dibbles, two commandments. Anoich le'yelecha. According to Rabbi Yosha ben Soloveitchik, by revealing the truth of creation, Klal Yisrael should have gotten all the mitzvahs. The fact is that Rabbi Yosha ben Soloveitchik has taken a very wicked Hasidic turn on the original sheet of the Goy. Now, the fact is that Rabbi Yosha ben Soloveitchik even in fact emphasizes this his other work. This is actually a very interesting theme in his writings. I'm now in Halachic Man, which also you got a photocopy of in the internet. On page 63, the third paragraph, the paragraph before the bottom, says Rabbi Yosha ben Soloveitchik, but what is the tale of the heavens, if not the proclamation of the Noam? What is the recitation of the firmament, if not the declaration of the commandments? All of existence declares the glory of God. Man's obligation to order his life according to the will of the Almighty. The principle of and thou shalt walk in his ways, imitatio Deo, flows from halachic man's daughter relationship to the world. We can know God's ways only through studying the cosmos. For it is in the cosmos that there stands revealed before us the glorious and resplendent attributes of action. And as Maimonides already taught in the Guide, section 154, that's in the part of negative theology, which we spoke about 2 weeks ago, the cognition of the attributes of action is the source of ethical life. In order to implement the ethical ideal, we must fix upon the whole of being and cognize it. This cognition is theological in essence. It aims to reveal the traces of the norm hidden within reality. Well, the fact is that the Rambam, in fact, did not say that. Even though the Rambam did say that one can describe the acts of God, that the Rambam did say. But the Rambam did not say that one can look at the physical world and derive an ethical life. Ethical life, according to the Rambam, as clearly the Rambam says in Chelek Beis, Perek Lamed Gimel, can only be known through revelation. The only two commandments, says the Rambam of the Mor Nevuchim, which can be known through philosophy, are the first two commandments, Anoich le'yelecha, like the Goyin says. But the other commandments, in fact, cannot be known through looking at nature. They can only be known through revelation. Now, it is true that the Rambam does say, at the very, very end of the Mor Nevuchim, Chelek Gimel, Perek Nun Dalet, that there is something called looking at the action of the world and walking, right? Walking in the ways of God. But here the Rambam is only referring to certain types of mitzvahs, like Bika Choylem, or Levayas HaMeis. But the Rambam is certainly not referring to the entirety of the Tayag mitzvahs, Chas V'Shalom. In my opinion, this is not true in the Rambam. Now, the fact is that Rabbi Yosha ben Soloveitchik cannot be blamed for having a shita like this, because this, in fact, is the shita of his Rebbe. Who was his Rebbe? His Rebbe was the philosopher Hermann Cohen, who was a German philosopher who lived in Marburg. He lived at the beginning of the 20th century. And Hermann Cohen was the founder of what's called the Neo-Kantian school of philosophy at the University of Marburg. Hermann Kahn was a person who later in his life, I'm not sure whether he did tshuva, but in a certain sense, Hermann Kahn did return to an affirmation of what I would call Jewish life or Jewish ethics. Now, in a very famous book of Hermann Kahn, which is called The Judaism of Religion of Reason, and I also Xerox this for you and for the internet, there Hermann Kahn says, on now page 95 in the second paragraph, says Hermann Kahn, action, the case of God, is related to the possibility of action and becoming, namely, in man. And this possibility is related not to causality, but comes under the viewpoint of purpose. Hence, the attributes of action are not so much characteristics of God, but rather conceptually determined models, right, for the action of man. What Hermann Kahn is speaking about like this. In the beginning, in chapter 6, I should also go back, Hermann Kahn speaks about negative theology. And there he speaks about describing God's actions, right? The place of being is taken by action. I'm now on page 94. And the place of causality is taken by purpose. However, says Hermann Kahn, that in fact, when we speak about the actions of God, right, they're not so much attributes of God, but rather determined models for the action of man. Hermann Kahn, in a certain sense here, even though he is making the connection between ethics and the action of God, he's locating this in not so much describing God's attributes, but rather in describing models for the actions of man. Now, in this case, in this sense, Hermann Kahn is in fact being very, very much Kantian. That in fact, there are two types of knowledge. The actions of man are not things that one, in fact, can glean from a knowledge of the physical world, but rather this what's called an ethical transcendental. Man, in a certain sense, is able to construct for himself an ethics which determine his actions. So, in other words, Kant sees the Rambam's negative theology and description of actions of God as being a source for ethics. But Hermann Kahn does not locate these ethics in nature, but rather locates these ethics in man's conceptual framework. So in other words, Hermann Kahn is learning pshat in the Rambam, like Rabbi Yosef ben Soloveitchik, but he's not going as far as Rabbi Yosef ben Soloveitchik. Now, why did I call Rabbi Yosef ben Soloveitchik the Talmud of Hermann Kahn? Well, first of all, we all know that at University of Berlin, Rabbi Yosef ben Soloveitchik wrote his thesis on Hermann Cohen's neo-Kantian philosophy. And secondly, in a very interesting article by Aviezer Ravitsky, there he says that in discussing the issue of ethics and ontology, where Hermann Kahn argues that for the Rambam, ethics and ontology were both on equal levels, and not the way we understood it, in Chelek Aleph, Perek Beis, when he adds Rabbi Yosef ben Soloveitchik, why do you understand it as such? Rabbi Soloveitchik replied, what can I do? That's the way Hermann Kahn understood it. That's a quote of Rabbi Soloveitchik, which is quoted by Aviezer, Professor Ravitsky. So in other words, Hermann Kahn is learning here that when we describe God's actions, we in fact are invoking the possibility that man can construct an ethical framework by which he looks at the world. However, Rabbi Soloveitchik is going even further. Rabbi Soloveitchik wants to claim that in fact, that by describing God's actions, we can locate an ethical content in the physical world. Therefore, Rabbi Soloveitchik holds, very interestingly enough, is that the physical world, in fact, contains ethical content, and one can derive ethics from the physical world, which seems to me to be a very, very strong deviation from the shita of the Goyim. So we can say in an interesting manner that just like Rabbi Soloveitchik's great-great-great-great-grandfather, Rabbi Chaim Volozhiner, changed the Goyim's shita and symptom and introduced a certain amount of immanence in the physical world, so too did Rabbi Yosef ben Soloveitchik change the Goyim's dichotomy between ethics and ontology and introduce an ethical content in the physical world. Now, Going a little bit back to Rabbi Soloveitchik, this issue of Rabbi Soloveitchik is very, very interesting. Because any Jew who's familiar with the halacha is well aware of the fact that one cannot derive mitzvahs. I mean, there's no concept of natural law in Judaism save for the mitzvah of halachtan bidrochai, which the Gemara speaks about in Daf Tezvav in Saita, which the Rambam invokes in Perek Nun Dalet of Chedek Gimel, the Bar Nevuchim. And I think Rabbi Soloveitchik is in fact familiar with this. Rabbi Soloveitchik's whole concept of halacha, as he expresses himself, that a halachic man understands in a very Reb Chaim Voloshiny idiom, that the halacha is pre-creation. The halacha is a conceptual framework by which a person views the world. If that's true, then Rabbi Soloveitchik's concept of the Torah and of the halacha is much more Kantian than it is in locating ethics within the physical world. Now, the fact is that this remains a very, very central contradiction in all of Rabbi Soloveitchik's works. I have looked for some type of a resolution of the contradiction. I think I've located it in Halachic Man, as translated by Lawrence Kaplan, page 101, 102, and 103. There, in a certain sense, Rabbi Soloveitchik wants to say that the halacha is similar to the creation in the sense that God, when he creates the world, creates boundaries, creates limits, creates categories. So too, when man acts in a creative capacity, then man in the halacha creates categories and creates boundaries. In other words, Bliska Torah is immaterio Deo, according to Rabbi Yosef Soloveitchik. This is all very nice, but this is not the same thing as saying is that there is a spiritual content in nature. So therefore, Rabbi Soloveitchik's principle, his philosophy here, in my opinion, is in fact actually not clear and, in my opinion, not really grounded, certainly, in the Shita of the Goyim. However, the way we explained the Goyim and the Rambam Shita 2 weeks ago, it turns out that it's not true. That in fact, ethics, which is the halacha, is really the interpretation, the man's interpretation of God's dibur. The only analogy between ontology and ethics which the Goyim made is that just like when a person studies the world, just like a person studies the world, interprets the world in order to discover the existence, unity of, and uniqueness of God, so too, God's dibur is also a creation, and therefore prophecy is the first interpretation of the creation. And Judaism creates what I would call a hermeneutical history, which interprets God's creation, God's utterances, and that's the essence of halacha. Halacha are not a priori theoretical constructs of the world, according to the way I understand the Rambam in the Ma'ariv Nevuchim and the Goyim in the Sar Klalim, but rather what halacha is, it's an hermeneutical process by which the interpretation of God's words is continued throughout history. I will, Amit Hashem, have much more to say about Rabbi Soloveitchik's philosophy, but not in the context of the Sar Klalim of the Goyim. Okay, so now, where are we left? We're left with the following thing, and this is the important thing. I want to summarize a little bit because we've covered a lot of material tonight. The basic nekuda, the basic point, which I'm trying to bring about is the following thing. The Goyim recognizes that during creation, the 6 days of creation, when the physical world ascended to the spiritual worlds, and where in fact there was spiritual content of physicality, which is not the matzah, the situation, after the Chet of Adar Rishon, in today's day of age, until Yemais Mashiach, during this time, the creation was given ethical content. So the Goyim understands that the imminent transcendental dichotomy is equivalent or analogous to the ontological ethical dichotomy. At a time when spirituality is imminent, that's at a time when ethical, right, ethics is equivalent with ontology. This existed only in the 6 days of creation, and this will be the Asid Lavoi. However, as far as history is concerned, there's no doubt about it, that so long as we live in a physical, natural world as we know it, therefore, one should not make any attempt to try to make a to try to draw a continuity, a continuous line between ontology and ethics. There is simply no relationship between them. The two of them are there's an economy and antinomy between the two. By doing this, the Goyim preserves the integrity of the halacha, and therefore, and also too, insulates Judaism from what's called the spirit of the law, from messianic interpretation of the law, which is the hallmark of Christianity, the hallmark of Christians' debate with Judaism. I'm very, very surprised at Rabbi Soloveitchik that he would make such a statement, which in fact actually, I'm not chas v'shalom trying to accuse him of anything, but leaves the road open to a type of natural theology which was not the hallmark of Jewish philosophers, but rather, on the contrary, of Christian philosophers. Okay, I hope this is not controversial, but Rabbi Soloveitchik, as being the most important Jewish thinker of the last half of the 20th century, his thought certainly requires our attention and discussion and reflection. Okay, now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go a little bit further. I'm going to go to Klal Gimel. And in Klal Gimel, the Goyin is now going to continue and go into detail into the process of creation. Okay? So what I'm going to do now is start to read from Klal Gimel, which begins, which is on Daf Kuf Chav Tes, and begins on line 64. Okay, Gimel. Says the Goyin, the Inyan HaTzimtzum, who be'es HaBriya, the Tzimtzum took place at the time of creation. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu thought to create the world in a certain manner, b'tzimun hazu means in the manner in which he created it, v'nimtza ha'tzimuna hi dovak b'rotzoni mamish, and this tzimuna, this the way in which the world is created, right, became connected with the rotzoin of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the will of God. In other words, Kadosh Baruch Hu actually created a rotzoin, right, in a little way. What is a little way? This was b'kadei liyos mitzius on evroim yichum lekabel hasik rotzoinay shezeh otachos kavanos b'yosay. In other words, God cannot reveal his entire rotzoin. Then he would utterly. Then the Briyas, the creations, as we explained in Klal Aleph, would not be able to be masik, to apprehend his Rotzoin. But rather, the Tzimtzum was that, in fact, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu thought to create the world, he wanted to limit his Rotzoin as well. So therefore, the fact is that by doing that, people would be able to have free will and would act according to his Rotzoin, which they perceived. Now, what is the Goyin doing? The Goyin is doing an incredible thing. What the Goyin is that the Goyin is going back, when he said in the first Klal, and there he spoke about the Tzimtzum being God's limiting of his will. And what the Goyin is doing now is the Goyin, in fact, is drawing an analogy between what we would call will and what we would call the ontology of the world. This doesn't mean that the ontology of the world is ethical content, but rather what the Goyin is saying is that the Tzimuna, the way the world is created, the way the world created, is an expression of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's limiting and placing limits upon his will. So therefore, we have to look at the physical creation, which, as Rabbi Soloveitchik so rightly points out, is filled with bounds and limitations, is in fact an expression of the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will is also being limited. So therefore, the notion of Tzimtzum is not only in terms of the will of God, but also in terms of the boundedness, the finitude of the physical creation. And this, the Goyin calls the Tzimuna, the way the world was created. It goes on the Goyin, on line 67. There's a three-part process by which HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates what's called the Tzimuna, the way the world is, the ontology of the world. V'hainu, that is to say, Ritzoin Yisboch HaMespashet B'tzmuna Hahi, Shit Pa'al Hu B'chokhman Nefla Ma'oid. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world in a certain way that his Ratzon would be expressed, right, with a tremendous wisdom using that Tmuna, that ontology. She is Havu Koyach Ma, Kloima Koyach B'yois B'dova Ayin, V'hu Adikra Chochma. So, the initial onset of the creation of the world, the way it is, this is called Chochma. Now, what is this Chochma? So the Goyim takes the word Chochma and breaks it down into what's called Koyach Ma. Koyach means the power to be what is, which actually is to be derived from, is actually from the Arizal. In other words, the Koyach, the power, or the ability to create Midova Ayin, creation ex nihilo, and that's called Chochma. In other words, Chochma refers to creation ex nihilo, and that is creates the means by which HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will can be expressed in the world. So the first level of creation is called Chachma. And that, the Goyim says, refers to the onset of creation. It's called Briya Yesh Mi'ayin, Dover Ayin. Now, what is Bina? Line 71. Bina hu ha-mevin Dover Miter Dover. What is Bina? Bina means to understand one thing from another. Deduction, induction. Kloima, his pashtus ritzayin v'midazu, uvaloi tosefes v'giroin, hu machba shechofetz aboi, right? Shiyya habriya b'tmunazu. Ve'im haya b'tosefes o giroin, hayin ishtanet t'munazu, l'tmuna, I'm crossing over the page, t'munazu, right? That is to say, God understands from this Tmuna. In other words, God's Ratzon cannot express with either more or with less. Okay, let me go back over, now that I've read things, or most things I've read, and let me try to explain to you what this means. We have a three-step process. This three-step process is referred to what's called Chachma, Bina, and Das. Once again, Chachma, right, is the onset of creation. Koyach miyois midova ayin. V'hu ha-nikra chachba. Creation ex nihilo. Creating being from non-being. That's called chachba. Koyach ma. That represents the ability of Kadosh Baruch Hu to create anything, to create something. Koyach ma of what something is. Now what is Bina? So Bina usually means mevin dava mitek dava. And what it means over here is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Ratzon, once again, the whole purpose of this is to find the means by which HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Ratzon can be expressed in the world. So this is the Tzimtzum. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is being Mitzamtzum his Ratzon, but needs the mechanism by which his Ratzon can be expressed in the world. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world in such a way that would express his Ratzon. Now, what the Goyim introduces now is the very, very interesting concept called, what I will call, the irreducibility of the world. What does that mean? What it means is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu understood that his Ratzon can be expressed only if he created the world in a certain way. It says the Goyim on line 75, in fact, if there was a little bit more, a little bit less, this tmuna would change. This is bina. God understand from this tamuna. In other words, God understood that his will can only be expressed in one way in the world. If we add it to the world, or subtract it to the world, if we change the ontology of the world, then God's will could not be expressed. And this is called Bina. Once again, what's called Bina? Maven Dava Mitok Dava. What does that mean, says the Goyim, to understand one thing from another thing? It means to understand that God's will can only be expressed in one way, by creating the world in one way. That's what he says. Line 75. Why was the creation like this and not some other way? And this is Bina. So what the Goyim is saying is, is the world the way it is can never have been in any other way. The world could only have been in one way. The Ratzon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu dictates that ontology is irreducible. This is not world, one world, with the possibility of other worlds. There could only be one world. There could only be one speed of light. There could only be one value to Planck's constant. There could only be one world which expresses HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will. Now, says the Goyim, that's what's called Bina. Now, what is Das? What is Das? Das is the understanding of this principle. Das is understanding how the world, the way it is that way in which the world can express the Ratzon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the will of God. That's what's called Das. So, in a sense, if we go back to the Goyim's earlier metaphor, we will see that just like the Goyim understand that, in fact, the God creates the world, B'Sefer, B'Sapa, V'Sipur, which the Goyim in Safed Sneyoser actually equates with Chachma, Bina, V'Das, that the writing of the book, the emergence of the existence of the book, is called Chachma. The way the book is written, the way it's expressed, is called Bina. That means when the person reads the book, he reads God's Chachma in a certain way. And Das expresses the intention of the author. So if we take this and we actually transform it to the notions of Chachma, Bina, V'Das, which is the expression of God's will through the world, then it comes out the following way. The actual creation of the world, which comes from God's desire to express his will, to limit his will, that's called Chachma. The way in which God's will is expressed, that's called Bina. But the way in which God's will is expressed is the only way it can be expressed. The world is irreducible. That's called Bina. The understanding of why the will of God expressed through this world, right? In a certain sense, that's what is called Das. So Das is basically this deep understanding why the physical structure of the world is the way it is. Okay, now, the fact is that the Goyim here is laying the foundations for a very deep philosophy of reality, of ontology. And this actually, philosophy of ontology, touches upon, in fact, a very, very, I would say, an important issue which has divided philosophers over the ages. It actually, in fact, is related to what's called the ontological argument for God, but also bears upon a very long discussion in modern philosophy. Philosophers like Kripke and Lewis, and Mirza Shembli Neder, in the following Shia, will actually go very, very deeply into the Goyim's theory of ontology and try to understand it in the context of the way we understand the reality of the world. Until then, I would like to thank Libby for having done a wonderful job. I trust this broadcast has actually reached everybody. I didn't notice that anybody asked any questions. I don't know if that is a good sign or a bad sign. People ask questions?
No.
No? Okay, very good. Either I kept you spellbound or kept you totally confused. And also, too, I want to wish everybody a Freilich and Chanukah. And that, Mirtz Hashem, we will continue next week, Sunday evening, which will be the fifth night of Hanukkah. Right, the sixth night of Hanukkah. And on that night, we will actually go deeper into Goyim's ontology, and maybe we'll try to throw something into Hanukkah in the meantime. I will not be Greek bashing, which is an innovation of the Maharal that I will not do next week in Mitzvah Hashem. But we'll go very deeply into the Goyim and understand really the philosophical basis of the Goyim's ontology and how it weighs into his Shitas HaKabbalah. Until then, I want to wish everybody a Freilich and Chanukah, and a lot of Hatzlacha v'chol tov.